Before we get into the episode, I want to give you a heads up that you may want to save this for when you're not with the kids and in a spot where you can put on some headphones, because there is some language in the episode. The content is great, but I want you to, again, be warned just so you don't throw this on with the kids in the car. And then, you know, I just don't want to have to blank anything out, really. So hope you enjoy the episode. It's great stuff from John Romaniello. Take care, and we'll see you next time. Hello and welcome back to the FitCast. My name is Kevin Larrabee. This is going to be episode number 381, and back on the show. It's been way too long, and it's just awesome to reconnect. And he's enjoying the weather on the West Coast, which is fine. There's snow outside, John. I'm just saying.
Oh, that's horrible.
It's March. There's snow outside, but my guest today is John Romaniello.
What's Hello. Up, How are you guys? It's so exciting to be back. It's like coming home again. I love this.
Well, I'm trying to like think back, because I know we ended up doing a couple episodes for Engineering the Alpha. We did two or three, because I think we did one with maybe just you, one with Adam, and then one with both you and Adam or something like that. But
yeah, it was all like right around that time. So it was probably around late 2012, early 2013 that we did all of those.
And we have a lot of stuff to catch up on, because this is like the weird thing is with the internet today, it's like you almost kind of forget to a certain extent that you lose touch. It's a really bad excuse, but like I continue to have like read your stuff, like, and actually, like, I'm just going to drop it right now. Like, make sure you're going to RomanFitnessSystems.com and go and check out the blog, because you've just been – this is one of the things. I look up to you, you know, not only as like a coach, as someone that's in the industry in terms of advice, doing great programming, doing awesome stuff in the industry, but also as a writer. Like, you put together some amazing pieces at RomanFitnessSystems.com, and – it's just badass stuff, man.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot. You know, that's you know, for anyone who doesn't know me by this point, that was really my entry point. You know, I started out, I was always a writer first. And, you know, I remember I was 8 years old and I told my mom I wanted to write a book, and she asked me why. And I said, books make me happy and I want to make other people happy too. And so I dove in, and I've always been a writer. And I just happened to fall into the fitness industry because I went through a body transformation when I was 19, and it was amazing, and it changed my life, and I wanted to help other people. And and you know, the exact like path that I went down to get published the first time is, it's not really that interesting. So I like to quote my friend, our mutual friend Ben Bruno, and when Ben talks about how he decided to like start writing fitness articles, he says, well, you know, I like writing and I like working out. Maybe just write about working out. And that's more or less what happened with me. And so I just sort of like dove in. I had the first piece published on what was then T-Mag and is now T-Nation. This is now in like 90. No, actually it was probably 2001, I think, or maybe 2002 was the first piece published over there. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's been, so, you know, my whole goal and one of the things that I tell everyone, you know, anytime people come to me for advice, and particularly my business coaching clients, is that the writing for me is the most important part, because at the end of the day, I'm not doing anything that's fundamentally radically different from what anyone else is doing. What differs is not so much the information, but the presentation. And I think that my career has more or less been built on being able to turn a phrase and write an article that is entertaining.
Yes.
And also, like, you know, gets the point across. You know, people would rather read, and not all people, some people, you know, like, you know, some people would rather read very dry, science-y material, but my people seem to really like, you know, reading stories about the time I fought a spider in my shower, or, you know, if I write, I recently wrote this piece that did really well. It was passed around a lot. It was about one of my coaching clients, this woman, Madison, and she had never really been able to get really lean. And so then we got her there and she got married and she looked great for her wedding photos. And then like after she got back from her honeymoon, she's like, I kind of hate this. I don't want to be this lean. Like it's too hard to maintain. And so then we had to like, you know, like back off a little bit and let her get a little softer without going too fast and screwing up anything metabolically. And so rather than tell that story in the traditional way, I told the story about Princess Madison seeking the help of the great wizard Roman. And so I told it as a fairy tale, and it did really, really well. So that's the kind of thing that I like. It's more interesting to me to tell a story in a fun way than it is to just, you know, put out some lectury or article that, you know, is just like, here are the things you do, and this is what happens if you need to regain fat without rebounding too quickly.
So, right. I mean, like, this is – okay, there's – I have, like, maybe seven things that I wrote down that I want to talk to you about.
Yeah,
and, you know, selfishly, this is going to be a show where I have, like, a ton of questions for you because, again, I think you just have just such great insight into not only, you know, the way that we can deliver this information for people because – like I've talked to a couple of guests in the past like 6 or 12 months about it. It's like we really do have a really good idea of what we need to do in the weight room, like to get people in shape and like what they need to eat. And, you know, we have a couple different strategies on like nutrition and see what best fits everyone's life and all that stuff. But, you know, what are we missing? What are we missing when it comes to getting people to actually adhere to that stuff? So that's where I kind of want to start. With sure. you, it's like we have the tools, we have the game plan, but what do we need to do, or how can we better help people to make sure that they're actually following that game plan?
You know, I think a lot of it has to do with where people are at when they come to you. You know, a lot of times people are just not ready to change. They need to hit bottom. You know, someone on Twitter asked us to talk about, you know, if people are grossly overweight, but they're eating 1,000 calories a day, like where do we meet that client? Mm-hmm. What do we say to that client to get them to realize that that is not the way to go about things, you know? And so a lot of times people just need to hit bottom, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. And then they'll finally get there. You know, for every single person, every single fitness pro I know who didn't start as an athlete, who was a chubby kid or a skinny kid, there's always that one moment, what Joseph Campbell in The Hero with a Thousand Faces. So Campbell, by the way, is my great inspiration for those who don't know. He is the progenitor of the term hero's journey. Mm-hmm. And so Campbell is a comparative mythologist, talks about storytelling. He was, you can read about Campbell another time or on my site, I've written ad nauseum. But Campbell calls this an inciting event, also known as a call to adventure. And for everyone in their story of how they get there, there has to be something. And in Star Wars, it's, you know, Luke hears the projected image of Leia saying, "Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope." And that is enough to get him to go in search of Ben Kenobi and then spiral forward on this quest. Everyone has that, whatever that is. And that is really what we need to find. For me, it was, you know, I wound up looking in a mirror and I just realized that the person that I was interiorly did not match the exterior. I looked... I didn't want to be out of shape. I didn't want to be a chubby kid anymore. Mm-hmm. And I was like mulling that over. And at the time of my life, I was working at The Gap, which is the worst job you can have in retail. Not the worst job you can have. I think there are worse jobs. But if you're going to work at a retail store, The Gap is pretty horrible. And this woman called and she said, "I need like 27 white polo shirts in various sizes." And when she got there, I had them for her and we started talking and I asked what she needed those shirts for. And it turned out that her husband was opening a gym and the shirts were for his employees. And it turned out that gym was 5 minutes from my house. So the next day I went in, I met the owner, he and I bonded. For whatever reason, he and I clicked and I joined that gym and I went through this massive body transformation. I eventually got a job at the front desk and he paid for my first personal training certification. And then I've gone on since then to change thousands upon thousands of lives through, you know, working directly with clients, either in the gym or over the internet or you know, tens of thousands more through my writing and my books and everything. So the lesson there, for whatever reason, that man, Alvin Batista, who became my Obi-Wan, he had the right presence, he had the right look, he had the right attitude, there was something about Alvin that I immediately connected to. There was something about him that said, you know what, he does make me feel like I can do it. And it's not like I didn't know that I, you know, there was, it's like I'd had high school coaches, I'd had other people, you know, I'd read fitness books, but there was nothing that had ever made me take that step. So what I think, it's a matter of hitting bottom. And then once you're there, looking for that person that you connect with. And that is why there are so many successful people in the world of internet fitness, because everybody serves a slightly different purpose, right? We're not all the same guy.
Right.
Again, to go back to it, I'm not doing anything fundamentally different than you know, Craig Ballantyne. Mm-hmm. But people buy coaches, not coaching. And that means that there's something about me that that resonates with my clients, whether it is that I talk about Brand New and Taking Back Sunday and I love, you know, early 2000s emo, or that I'm constantly talking about Dungeons and Dragons, or that, you know, my Facebook page is a page where you can come and talk about anything from anal sex to the Avengers. And for some people that really, other people that turns them off completely and they're going to run and they want someone who's not quite so out there. Mm-hmm. And so what I think for like the average client is we all have the tools in the fitness industry. We have all of the tools necessary to give that client the transformative experience, but we just need to find the exact right language. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I tell fitness professionals is not to worry about the way to talk to the person who is not your person. Don't worry about the language you need to find to work with Aunt Millie. Maybe you're not supposed to work with Aunt Millie.
Right.
Maybe you're supposed to work with Uncle Steve. Maybe the fact that, you know, Uncle Steve was a wrestler in high school and college and you have an athletic background, maybe that resonates with him. So rather than trying to worry about how we as fitness professionals can individually help everyone, mm-hmm. what I would rather focus on is teaching people how to help the people in their respective target audience. You know, like work with the people you can work with. There are thousands of people who the idea of working with me is probably abhorrent and possibly nauseating. But there's tens of thousands more who would clamor for the chance to work with a guy who has a very firm opinion that Final Fantasy VI is better than Final Fantasy VII, and that anyone who says otherwise is an idiot.
Okay, who's debating that? I would even say 4 is better than 6.
4 is – 4 has probably the greatest overall story with the love triangle between Cecil and Kane and Rosa. But I will say that the overall stakes are so much higher in Final Fantasy VI. And like, you know, the you know, like not having one central character. So I don't know. They're on the same level for me. My personal opinion is that 4 is a more entertaining game. It was a better story for me. Mm-hmm. But I will say that I can understand the argument why 6 is better. But people who don't know Final Fantasy and they didn't get into it until Final Fantasy 7 came out and there was that big marketing campaign and that was their entry point, mm-hmm. they have this, you know, rose-colored glasses view of why Final Fantasy 7 is the best game ever, and it's simply not. It's just not. Right. For those of us like you who played old-school RPGs, right, you right. know – that it's like it's an inferior game. But here's the thing, Kevin.
Yes.
That conversation right there, the one that we just had, that is going to make somebody think, wow, these are the guys I need to listen to because I have an opinion about that. Mm-hmm. You know, Craig Ballantyne doesn't know about that. Eric Cressy doesn't know about that. Martin Birkin doesn't know about that. AJ Roberts doesn't know about whatever it is. And all of these guys are immensely qualified to help the person listening to this. But they're going to look to work with us because we meet them on that personal level where we can have that conversation about Final Fantasy.
And I'll just say, like following up on all that, I tried playing Final Fantasy VII for the first time a couple years ago. It's not there. It's not – I couldn't do it. Not there. Well, maybe – okay, let's flip the script and we got to keep in mind that, you know, we're two men that are about to just talk about this right now, but I want to talk about like I interview obviously a lot of women on the show as well, and not marketing, but I guess the way that they would try to approach a potential market, would that be different or is it very similar? Because there's a very interesting not like trend or anything like that, but the rise of the female strength coach has been incredible to see. The female coach has been awesome. And is what they need to do any different?
I don't think so. I mean, I think as long as you're putting your personality out there, the people who, you know, are going to resonate with you are going to resonate with you, right? Mm-hmm. It's like what's a really good example? Okay, like Jen Sinclair is a great example. Jen is a wonderful coach. And, you know, she's one of the best I've ever met in the world, male mm-hmm. or female, for teaching the Olympic lifts. She's just is able to break that down. She's a great movement coach. But then secondly, she's really able to break that down and make it actionable step by step and teach it to people who have never even touched a barbell before. It's wonderful to see. Mm-hmm. But online, in addition to talking about all that stuff, you know, Jen talks about like fashion all the time, and she's got a very particular style, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, she wears like big chunky jewelry. She wears fanny packs all the time. And she, her Instagram is as much about that stuff in her life as it is about fitness. And if you go to Jen's Instagram or Neg Arfanuni's Instagram, my lovely wife, if you go to theirs or Jill Coleman's or any of the, you know, the really, really successful women in the fitness industry who also have backgrounds as high level coaches, what you'll see is that they're going to get more comments on the lifestyle stuff than they are right, about right. The fitness stuff, right? Like, you know, Neg can post a video of her doing the world's most flawless kettlebell swing, and you know, the comments that she gets is, "Where'd you get that shirt?" And but like, if she doesn't engage, if she doesn't answer that, if she doesn't talk about those things, then for whatever reason, you know, like those people are going to go away. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's very much about putting this stuff out there, you know, like talk about the music that you like, mm-hmm. talk about the entertainment, the stuff that you like. You know, I wrote an entire product a couple of years ago with Roger Lawson called the Zombie Apocalypse Survival Workout.
That's right.
And it did really well for us. And it was basically like we wrote what would more or less boil down to, we wrote 12 weeks of CrossFit style programming, mm-hmm. Under the assumption that if you had to choose who do you think would have the greatest chance of surviving the zombie apocalypse, a powerlifter, a bodybuilder, a strongman, or a CrossFitter?
CrossFitter by far, for obvious reasons.
Exactly. Right. Or just like a general athlete, right. You know? So we decided, let's write that. And so I don't want to write about CrossFit. I want to write about zombies.
Yes.
And I love The Walking Dead. And so we wrote that program and we sold a couple of thousand units to people who also, you know, they don't want to read about CrossFit. They want to read about zombies. And so
gotcha.
The lesson there is that if you talk about the things that you are passionate about other than fitness, then you're going to connect with people who are also passionate about fitness and those things. And, you know, it can be – it can be the fact that you love Saved by the Bell or, you know, 90210 or whatever else was popular when you were a kid. You know, like the references that I make to 80s movies, they really play very well. Mm-hmm. And so every single coach has a responsibility to themselves to not be so professional all the time and put your personality out there. Talk about that stuff. And by talking about it, you actually become a better writer. You're able to switch voices pretty aggressively and pretty deftly, I would say. And that really helps a lot. And does that answer the question, you think?
It totally does. And the last part that I want to follow up with, and it's just because it's kind of like the perfect timing right now, is like, is there a limit to where you stop giving your opinion on stuff? Because, you know, right now we're in a pretty heated political climate, especially in the United States right now.
Sure.
You know, people could be posting, you know, one way or another. Is that going too far in terms of potentially alienating 50% of potential audience?
Well, yes, but also no. And here's the thing: depending upon how passionate you are about and how firmly you believe in your political views, maybe sure it's going to alienate people, but those might be people who you don't want to work with, you know?
Right.
The only like really strong political ideals I have are like, I'm truly very, very, very socially liberal, mm-hmm. with regard to, gender equality,
yes.
and,
yep.
and, you know, equality for, or equality in general, like the LGBT community and gender equality. Like that's where I feel strongly about. Right. And I'm also like, I come from a mixed race family. You know, my dad's side of the family, my dad's like, you know, his mom is half black. And so his half sister is, I guess, three quarters black, you know? So like on my dad's side of the family, all my relatives are black, and on my mom's side, they're all, you know, Italian. And, you know, we all fucking get together for Christmas and nobody's racist and it's fine. And so racism for me is like, if you're a racist, I don't want to work with you. And if you don't believe that gay people have the right to get married, I don't want your fucking money.
Right.
I don't want it. I don't want that tainted cash. Like, put it somewhere else. I don't give a shit. Some other person can help you.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, if you are so strongly opposed to Donald Trump that you don't want the money, that you're in a financial position where you can turn down money from anyone who's a Trump supporter, then by all means, put that shit out there. Right. You know, you have every right to put out as much as you want, as long as you are willing to accept the potential fallout of people who are strongly opposed to your point of view. I personally want to be on the right side of history, and you know, and I feel very strongly that, you know, like, I mean, half of my employees are gay because I like to hire actors, you know, because they're hard workers and it's a flexible job and they can take time off. And, you know, I have gay relatives and some of my best friends are gay. And it's just, it's abhorrent to me that someone could be like, no, this person can't have the same rights. And if that's your, so I put that stuff out there. I post things that are in support of equality. And if someone is not interested in working with me because of that, then like, fuck them. It's right. Probably not a good fit anyway. Because at the end of the day, every single person you work with should be a good fit for you. Mm-hmm. You should be able to meet that person in a bar and like have a good conversation. And if you can't, you know, then they should work with someone else. So, you know, I don't personally think there's a ton of value in adding your probably less than expert level opinion about politics to Facebook. I don't think that there's really anything there. The reason I would avoid let me just say this. As a business coach, the reason that I would tell people to avoid that, don't post about politics or religion. The reason that I would tell you to avoid that is because it will get a response and it's going to create a time suck on your day.
Right.
And that's time that you could be using to write articles, to help your clients, to write newsletters and build your list and create the things that you need to put out in the world. And at the end of the day, like arguing on Facebook is it just simply doesn't change what's going to happen during the election. So it is ultimately time wasted.
Yeah, maybe just post something that says, go register to vote. Go vote.
Yeah, like either way, it doesn't matter who you support. Go register to vote. You know, people fought and died for your right to do that. Yep. If you don't register to vote, you're an idiot. Like just fucking say that and be done with it.
Well, let's talk let's transition a little bit to, you know, like the mental side of things when it comes to, I guess, behavior modification, like behavior change of people, kind of like almost taking a couple steps back to what we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is where maybe I'm the most fascinated in terms of like doing lots of reading and trying to figure out, you know, like we were talking about before, like, you know, if we have kind of like the tools that we need, you know, what do we need to do mentally? And you actually wrote, and maybe I'll even take another path with this, is that, you know, you actually wrote on your website, maybe it was like a couple months ago or it was probably a couple months ago, about like mindset. And let me see if I'm going to see if I can pull the post real quick, because that way I can actually reference it appropriately. There's one I was going to talk about anyways, but in terms of like productivity and like getting into the right mindset, because not only is it just like people wasting time like at the gym, but they, you know, they could also be wasting time as like a, you know, fitness professional just doing stuff that's not really going to get them to where they want to be going. So what are some of your thoughts on all that stuff?
Well, I think it's really important to identify the behaviors that aren't ultimately like moving the needle, right? And also, you know, sometimes it's like, okay, well, that brings value to my life. I enjoy it, so I'm going to keep doing it. Mm-hmm. But other times it's a matter of, you know, like it's just this ingrained habit. And so let's talk about like productivity before we get into the fitness stuff.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, there's a lot of bullshit that floats out there about productivity. And, you know, everyone's just like, well, you know, like get into your flow state, you know, get into your magic time. You know, how many people do you know whose magic time is actually 3 a.m. until 6 a.m? Probably not that many.
No.
But how many people do you know that when you were in college were able to churn out a term paper at 3 a.m. and finish at 6, and it was incredible?
That's some of my biggest triumphs in college happened in the library, right? Between 3 and 6.
Exactly. So very, very few people are actually doing their best work during their so-called magic time. Like, listen, mm-hmm. we all have times of day when we're going to be more productive. Like, you know, 3 p.m, like most of us are just shit. Mm-hmm. But, you know, every single person I know can be productive if there is a deadline at any time of day. If there is a deadline and there are consequences for not meeting it, every single person I know can be productive. Mm-hmm. A very good example is my former protege, Mike Vacanti, who started as a Roman Fitness Systems intern, became a superstar in his own right, and is now the trainer to Gary Vaynerchuk as they look for the new trainer since his contract is expiring. He has a bet with himself. He actually just put this up on his blog. I think it was like for the first, like it was like for a 6 month period, he wrote one article for his site and he's like, I can't do that. And so he made a bet with himself that if he does not write one article per week, he's going to, like, any week that he misses, he's going to give his entire net worth to a person that he hates. And I know Mike well enough to know that he would fucking do it. So, I mean, it doesn't have to be that, but you can, like, have some pretty serious consequences for yourself. So since he made that declaration, and he put it in public, by the way, he put it out there. Mm-hmm. He has published one article a week like clockwork, right? So there is a deadline and there is a consequence. Mm-hmm. This or that. It's produce or, you know, it's fuck or walk. That's it.
Right.
And that's huge. So what I think most people need to do is create like really hard rules for themselves. And if they don't do it on time, they don't have accountability, you know, then there's got to be consequences.
What's the best way to make yourself accountable? Is it best to get like not necessarily even like a coach, but to get someone in on it with you? Or is there a way that, you know, you think people could best help build themselves up to be able to follow that stuff?
I think a coach is really helpful, but honestly, what's going to hurt you most? If like, is it money? If giving away money is going to hurt you the most, then put that out in the world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like a good way to do it is to preemptively give the money to someone else or put it in an account. And if you do not do X by whatever time, then the money is already gone. Mm-hmm. And so now you have not only the negative consequence of losing it, but you also have like the positive reinforcement of like getting it back, which mm-hmm. also feels good. Because it's like, no, I just got paid $500 for my own article on my own site, you know? One of the things that we do in my business is I noticed I was not writing for other publications as much, and I just like don't want to fall into that habit of not having my name out there. Mm-hmm. So what we did is whatever that publication would pay me for an article, if I do not write an article for them, you know, in like the given time and finish it by the deadline that they want, I take – so let's say they were going to pay me $300 for an article. Mm-hmm. In addition to not making the $300 for the article, I have to take $300 and I give it to someone I don't like. I won't mention who, but like I PayPal this person money. And it's like, not someone I don't like, but someone with whom I'm competitive in business. Mm-hmm. And I like just don't want to give them money. So, you know, and it's like that has forced me to produce more stuff for outside my site. So consequences, man, that's huge. You know, deadlines really help. This is the same reason, by the way, most people like who are happy in relationships and they're like, oh, we're going to get engaged. Guess when they get in shape? When they get the ring, and now they gotta get in shape for a wedding. That's a deadline. The wedding date is a deadline, and there are consequences for not hitting your goal. And that is you're not in the shape that you want to be, and those very expensive pictures, which can cost anywhere from $4,000 to fucking $20,000 for a good photographer on your wedding day. Now those very expensive pictures are of you not looking happy with yourself. That is a deadline and a consequence.
Well, do you think consequences fall on the side of like potentially being negative reinforcement for people? Or you know, I'm trying to look at this in terms of, you know, we've heard a lot. I guess there's just been a growing trend of like having a really positive outlook in terms of like fitness and nutrition and body positivity and all that stuff. Do you think that Yeah, go ahead.
I think it's great to be body positive, and I think that, you know, like everyone should try to get there, but we, and this is unassailable, this is a psychological fact. Mm-hmm. All of us are wired to be a lot more consequence averse than benefit motivated. You know, mm-hmm. like we don't hunt so that we can eat. We hunt so that we don't starve.
Right.
The benefit of having the food is not as powerful as the avoiding the consequence of starving and dying. Does that make sense? Even though ultimately it's the same thing, it's just a different way of looking at it. And we are all consequence averse. We're wired that way from an evolutionary perspective. So I don't think that consequences are ultimately negative in that, you know, or at least I don't think they enforce like body negativity. Mm-hmm. But it's just like, listen, it's having a goal. And it doesn't have to be like lose fat and be a size 6 or no one's going to love you. It can be, you know, like when do people start training harder for powerlifting meets? When they book the meet, exactly. When they register for that meet, 20 weeks, or same thing with a bodybuilding show, right? Like, mm-hmm. listen, most of us are probably not capable of walking around at 3% body fat year round. But if we really wanted to, we could probably – men could be sub 10 and women could be around 16. And it's not that difficult. I mean, it's hard. You got to like pay attention to it. Mm-hmm. But we don't do it. Why? Because there's no consequence and there's no deadline. The most bodybuilders that I know have all of the skills and tools necessary to be sub 10% body fat year round. And they're not sub 10% body fat until they book themselves for contests, and now they've got a date looming, and the consequence for not getting in shape is losing.
So you think that's why you've been able to be so productive over the last couple of years, is like building in some sort of, you know, consequence, or, you know, if then, then that kind of situation.
Yeah, I need deadlines and I need consequences. And, you know, and honestly, like, because once you become relatively financially successful in the sense that all your bills are paid and you don't have to worry about shit, you're well fed and it's very hard to be hungry. You know, when I first started out in this, in the online industry, I was training God knows how many hours a week. And I was probably training 30 hours, 40 hours a week, and I was running a facility. And then I started blogging from 9 p.m. until 3 in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I was hungry, man. I wanted it so bad. I didn't just want the money. I wanted the taste of success. I wanted the recognition of my name. I wanted people to know all of the shit that I'd been working on in the shadows for 10 years. And I was hungry. But now, you know, I've got a best-selling book, you know, for which I was paid a $1 million advance. I've got a very successful business that does well. I'm very well-fed. I'm no longer hungry. Mm-hmm. And so the only way that I can like really motivate my shit myself to get my shit done in the time that I want is to impose hard, super painful consequences for myself. And, you know, I don't like, honestly, there are times where I'm like, so I live in California now, as you mentioned. And it's great here. You know, this is where my wife is from. And, you know, right now it's like 78 degrees outside, and I know there's snow on the ground over in Massachusetts, but this is not my home. Kevin, my home is New York, and in particular, New York City, you know, like, and so I have a trip booked back to New York for my birthday. It's paid for, you know, I have tickets to go see Dashboard Confessional because I'm a big emo guy in Atlantic City. And my three best friends and I, in addition to some other people like Mike, we're all going down to Atlantic City to play poker. This is how I have celebrated my birthday. Probably I'm going to be 34. So since I was 21, that's 13 years. We've probably done that 10 out of those 13 years. Mm-hmm. It's what I like to do. I like to go to AC and play poker on my birthday with my three best friends who I've known since I'm 15 years old. And if I do not get this big project I'm working on before then, I do not get to get on the plane.
Right.
That is the consequence. There's a deadline. My flight is April 6th at 1 p.m. And if I do not have all of this shit done and turned in, I don't get to get on that plane. I not only like miss out on something I want to do, I disappoint a bunch of people that I love, and I lose money. So I have emotional, personal, and financial accountability. Mm-hmm. And I guarantee you my shit will be done by April 5th, but probably not by April 4th. I leave April 6th. It'll be done the day before or the day of, because that's how people work.
Okay. I like where this is going. All right. So I want to jump off of that, because you also did a post about fear in business, and I was kind of talking a little bit about this, because I'm always, sure, you know, this is kind of like what I do these days, is like being in the business world and trying to, I mean, like, I'm working on something right now. By the time people hear this, it's probably going to be out there, but like, I'm scared shitless. Like, I'm so, like, we talked a little bit about this before we started recording. I didn't bring this like all this whole point across, but like, I am super nervous. Like, I'm super worried about failure, about, mm-hmm. you know, this not working with the reception, like, is no one even going to like check this thing out? Is it going to be worth all like these, you know, all this time and that the investment of time and money going into it? You know, what mindset should I have, like, you know, right now, so I don't screw it up?
Well, honestly, the fear of failure is pretty endemic to anyone who is, you know, to everyone in the entrepreneurial space, right? We're all a little bit afraid of failure. But I don't know, like, there's a lot of platitudes and stuff, just like, I don't know. Honestly, for me, what drives you, Kevin? What's the thing that like, that really drives, is it money? And it's okay if it's money, I'm just asking, but what's your primary driver? Is it money? Is it freedom?
Well, the thing is that for me, and you know, probably people have noticed since I haven't like done advertising on the show, it's not money. Like, right. from what I do, like, you know, I can pay the bills and I can get my dog the dog food that my vet recommends, which is great. And
it can be expensive.
It is super expensive. Come on, but it's like some crazy stuff. Anyways, I think for me, and you know, maybe it's probably a little bit safer to talk about this now. It's like I really love talking to people. I love talking to like what we're doing right now. Mm-hmm. Like the whole reason this whole show started is selfishly so I could call up Craig Ballantyne and call, you know, John Berardi. Like those are the two guys at the time whose stuff I was reading. Mm-hmm. And the way I rationalized it to them is like, hey, I'm going to record this and I'll share it with everyone. And that way, you know, people can benefit from it. So that's why I'm doing kind of what I'm doing right now is like this, what we're doing right now, this is what I love doing mm-hmm. more than anything. I love training. I love coaching my athletes. It's awesome. But I also really love this and I'm somewhat decent at doing it.
Yeah, no, you're quite a good interviewer, and I've done a lot of these fucking podcasts, man. Okay. So one of the things I do is I tell people to like really find whatever your motivation is, right? For me, like, you know, I grew up a poor kid in a single parent family, you know, like once my parents split, you know, my dad wasn't really around after I was 9. And things were really rough. And you know, I mean, it was really bad, like government aid, like my mom was on welfare until I was like 14 and I started working. So for me, money was a huge motivator early on. And then once that was taken care of, you know, so I've always been a hard worker. I've never had less than 2 jobs and I was always able to help out and take care of things. But once money was no longer a motivator, I had to like really think about what drives me. And honestly, for me, it's legacy. Mm-hmm. You know, like I love the idea that my book will be around after I'm dead. I love the idea that like my name is whispered in very high circles, and you know, sometimes with praise and sometimes with abject scorn, but it's still talked about. And for me, legacy is what drives me, right? And that is why I like put a lot of pressure on my kid. It's why I put a lot of pressure on myself, because we have a very, very limited amount of time on this earth, and I want to leave a fucking dent, you know, because the people that have meant the most to me in my life outside of like my immediate friends and family are the people I've never met. It's fucking Hemingway and Campbell and Fitzgerald and Tolkien. And I just want to write one sentence, one book, one thing that 30 years after my death, some guy will read and it'll change his fucking life. Mm-hmm. And that's what drives me every single day when I put my fingers on the keys or set pen to page. And that's my why. For you, it sounds like you don't really think about the future. You're present minded.
Totally.
You're enjoying the moment, right? Yeah. And for you, what it sounds like your motivation is you want to make something successful so that you could free up as much time as possible to do more of the thing that you love and less of the thing that you don't love as much.
Right.
So, you know, so let's talk about like business, right? I wrote in that article about, you know, like being afraid to learn new things in business. Mm-hmm. You have so many fitness professionals who they just hate on online trainers, right? There's so much fucking like vitriol about, oh, you're not a real trainer. You just work over the internet or whatever. And that's fine. You know, like hopefully they get over that. But there's a lot of trainers who I think they're just scared to learn the tools necessary to be successful in business.
Yep.
And, you know, like, it sucks. Yeah, you spent all this time learning how to teach the Olympic lifts and learning how to coach the deadlift, and you worked your ass off for 5 years to become a great coach and to build a client roster, and now someone's telling you that in addition to that, you've got to learn SEO. You've got to learn how to write. You've got to learn how to write copy to sell your product. You've got to create a product. You've got to learn ClickBank. You've got to learn email marketing.
Yep.
Then you have to go further and look at your metrics. You have to check your open rates and figure out how to get them higher. You have to increase your click-through rate. Then when you're promoting products, you got to know what your CPM is, what your EPC is, your earnings per click. Whereas like on one of my products, if we can average it out, it means that roughly every single time somebody clicks on a product, there's going to be a dollar earned. You know, like all of these things that you're afraid to learn, and that keeps people from learning them, and they never do it. And instead, that fear, it sits in their belly and it boils over and it turns to hate. Mm. You know, it's very clear. Yoda says it. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering. It's a very linear progression. So if you are afraid to learn things, eventually you will get angry at the people who have not been afraid and who have learned them and who are using them to be successful. That anger will turn into hate, and you will hate them for being successful. And then the hate leads to suffering. But it's not their suffering. It's not you. You have no power to make me less successful because I got good at writing copy. It's just the only one who suffers is you for sitting there and wallowing in your hate and your self-pity and spitting fucking nonsense all over the internet about how internet trainers aren't real trainers. Just be better. Learn these things. Learn the shit that you need to learn to be more successful than me. You want to shut me up? Be louder than me.
And this is coming from someone that's known a lot of people in the industry doing this for the last 10 years. And like, so many people need to hear that message, because that is like, you know, I have people that I know who just, they love to, when they see an article, I can't believe that guy got on T Nation. I can't believe he's writing, you know, for that magazine. Like, I know so much more than him. Well, then
submit an article.
Yeah. Like, he did it. Like, you're the one who just went home and turned on The Simpsons. Well, who watched The Simpsons? Turn on whatever, turn on football.
Right.
When he had his laptop open writing, or she had her camera and was shooting videos in the gym when the gym was empty.
Right. And that's the thing. You know, people love to hate on people. It's like, oh, this person doesn't know anything. Okay, but if they don't know anything and they were able to do it, think about you with all your knowledge and all your skill and all your experience. What can you do? Okay. What lives can you change once you have that bigger platform? How amazing is that? How incredible is it that this know-nothing, if they are that indeed, or whether that's just your perception, but if they are actually a know-nothing scrub, if they're able to get on T Nation, imagine what you can do once you get on T Nation.
Yeah, okay, but I'm looking at my notes because there's like a
couple. Yeah, we got plenty. I got nowhere to go. I'll be here for 3 hours with you today, Kevin, and you can spend as many episodes as you want. I'm here to give value.
Unfortunately, I have like what would you call it? A conference call in 15 minutes or in 10 minutes? So
let's go through a lightning round. What else can I do? How else can I add some value for your listeners?
Well, I mean, you work with so many people, so there's a couple things that I want to ask you. Is like, you know, what are you kind of seeing across the board as like common trends with people that are looking for your help for online training, distance coaching, or in person, whatever?
Sure.
What are the things that you're kind of seeing as common trends and things that, you know, we as coaches should be watching out for, and then how we can, you know, do things better, how we can address things better with those people? Yeah.
Yeah. So this is really interesting. So 5 years ago, definitely 10 years ago, but as recently as 5 years ago, when people would approach me for online training and they'd ask about it, I'd have to explain what it is and like talk them through the, you know, yes, it's possible to get results over the internet. We never have to meet, that kind of thing. So now online training is a little bit more ubiquitous. And most people coming in, they know about online training. So I don't need to tell them about online training. I just need to tell them how I can help them. But the interesting thing is how many people are just changing the channel and not turning on. It's like, so what I mean is like, I have a lot of clients who are working with me after working with someone else. And a lot of my clients move on from working with me to work with another person. Mm-hmm. And it's not because they're like sick of me or because I didn't get them good results. And like, usually when they're coming to me from Cressy or whomever, it's they had a perfectly great experience, but now they're just ready to like change the channel and like watch something new for a while. Mm-hmm. And it's such an interesting thing that now it's people are – they've almost like – there are so many people who are taking their fitness so seriously that they've like sort of built $300 a month into their budget, and I'm going to work with Roman for 5 or 6 months, and then I'm going to move on and I'm going to work with someone else, and I'm going to work with Eric Bach for 6 months, and you know, after that I'm going to work – you know, and it's crazy. It's really nice to see that that these people are doing this. Now this forces us to do two things. One, it forces us to take a longer view and like look back, because they, you know, if somebody worked with somebody for 6 months, they have those programs, so you can send those over to me. Mm-hmm. So now there's a lot of clients. I have to put more work into like the first couple of months of working with a client because I have all this extra data. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is that I think that it creates more competition and it raises the level of production. And, you know, you have to be a little bit better because, you know, I know that once they finish with me, they're going to go work with someone else and that guy's going to like look at my shit. And I'm like, all right, well, you know, I want to like really make this as good as possible. So I think that what's happened is, at least for me, the overall level of experience for my clients has gone up. So I have to be better. I'm not sending out a lot of basic programs anymore, which is great because one, I don't have to like break people in. I'm not like, or, you know, rate yourself on the deadlift from 1 to 10. It's like somebody sends me a picture of them. Like, you know, like I recently had a woman, she like sent me a picture of her, her best pull in a powerlifting meet. And it was like 280. And I'm like, all right, I don't have to, yes, I can just put deadlifts in. I don't have to program them. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have to like program you ramping anything up. So I think that as coaches, what we need to be aware of is where our clients have been before us, and that should inform our programming. And I think that as a whole should make us much better programmers. So if you work with clients online, I think it's really important to like have a full conversation with them and see how many people they've worked with before, take a look at that stuff and really like get into it. I think that's worth it.
The other thing that I needed to talk to you about was books, because I think I'm surprised you have room where you live because of all the books that you read. So, I mean, it has been a while since we chatted and I'm just like, I'm going through, you know, 2-3 books a month, but I just want to know, like, what are the books maybe in the last year or even two that have had the most impact on you, you know, either personally or professionally?
Sure. Well, actually, I will mention this. Gary Vaynerchuk's new book, Ask Gary B, just came out.
I'm almost done with it.
Yeah, it's great. Honestly, it's really, really good. I've heard the audiobook is even better.
You have to get the audiobook because
I hear it's incredible.
He's like having a conversation with you and he actually adds a bunch to it and there's side stories in it. Just get the audiobook. Even if you have the paperback, just get the Audible book, set up an account and download it to your full list.
That's what I'm going to do. So, you know, I love Gary. Gary and I worked together for a couple of years. He was my personal training client and then I passed him off to Mike. But Gary was a big mentor to me in a lot of ways. You know, Gary gave me the best piece of relationship advice I ever got. And, it prompted me to get out of, a not so good kind of mediocre relationship. And that freed me up to meet Nagar, who, you know, I fell in love with in about 8.5 seconds and married like 20 minutes later. I think it was like a year, less than a year after we met, we got married. I think that's really, really, really great is Gary's book. Turning around to look at my bookshelf. Neil Strauss wrote a book called The Truth, an uncomfortable book about relationships. And this, was a very, very good, extremely well-written. Neil is an amazing writer, an amazing author. It did shine a light on a lot of dark places in myself. Some like interesting things that Neil went through with his family mirrored a lot of mine and it fucked him up in a lot of unique ways. And it sort of forced me to dive in and go through some stuff. And, it was sort of a painful experience for me, but I think that I really came out better for it. It was a really, really great book. That one really resonated with me. So The Truth by Neil Strauss. What else? The Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Holiday. Another good friend. You know, if you're not familiar with Stoic philosophy, read The Obstacle is the Way, and it will act as not only a very actionable book, but a great entry point for Stoic philosophy. And I think that's really important. So, yeah, I mean, there's definitely some others that I've read or reread recently. But I do think that those are the big three that have like really profoundly affected me. Kevin, if I recall, you're like a sci-fi fantasy guy too, right?
Yes, sir.
Have you read Patrick Rothfuss at all or no?
No.
Oh my God. I'm about to change your life. Okay. So you need everyone who is interested in science fiction and fantasy. If you like Tolkien, if you read Harry Potter and anything else, if you're looking for something to read, stop whatever you're reading right now and immediately pick up a book called The Name of the Wind by Patrick Rothfuss. I have recommended this book to everyone. And everyone I have recommended it to loves it. Tim Ferriss loved it so much that it became the giveaway book for one of his book club months. Wow. And so like the month he finished it, he did it. And I actually got a mention on the Random Show or one of his podcasts because of recommending that book to him. So he really loved it. I also recommended it to Derek Flansreich, the founder of greatest.com. He loved it. Mm-hmm. It focuses on the story of a wizard named Kvothe, K-V-O-T-H-E. And sort of in the frame story, you meet him when he's an older guy. And then This story is basically him telling the story of his life. So it's really well told, thunderous prose. It's a fun, engaging read. It's got some really dark points. If you like Game of Thrones, you will absolutely love this. If you like Tolkien, you will love this. If you like Harry Potter, you will love this. I will apologize in advance, though, because it is slated to be a trilogy and only two of the three books are out currently. So, you're gonna have a long wait for book three. But I promise you, if you pick the first one up, you'll be done with it in like 4 days. And it's a long book; it's 800 or 900 pages, but you'll tear through quickly. I think you'll like it.
Well, this the thing that I need to consider is: do I get it on Kindle or do I get it on Audible?
You know what? I have both. The guy who reads the audiobooks does a really great job. This is actually an interesting moment for me. I'm having a weird sort of. Because normally I would be like, oh, fuck it. Just like read the book the way it's intended to be written.
Right.
But he's done such a great job with the audiobooks that I would either one. I don't actually have an opinion in this case. What I will say though is that I've read both books three or four times now, and I've listened to the audiobook once or twice. And often, like if I can't go to sleep, I will put that audiobook on or Neil Gaiman, The Graveyard Book, also fantastic audio, and I will put one of those two on, and I'll just like listen to it and fall asleep.
I'm buying the audiobook. I'm going to Tokyo and China in like 2 weeks, so I got some time on a plane.
Yeah, the audiobook will definitely get you through it. It's really great.
Okay, done deal. Last thing I want to talk to you about before I get a jump is like, you know, for you, like, do you have anything coming up that the audience should know about? Keeping in mind that this is probably not going to come out for like 2 weeks.
Okay. You know, the big thing for me right now is I'm head first in business coaching. So I started my own mastermind. I've got 25 guys in there who are, you know, like doing amazing things and getting published everywhere. And I'm teaching a lot, and that's really, really rewarding for me.
Very cool. So
the great thing about it is that Roman Fitness Systems has turned into this place where I can feature them and publish them the way T-Nation was able to feature me when I was a 20-year-old kid, like, you know, who's just trying to write about butts and glute training. And so the mastermind is huge. I love all the guys who are in there, and I'm really excited to see them. In addition to that, I have started really digging into the outline of my next hardcover book, and really fleshing it out. It is going to be The Hero's Journey, Campbell's work as applied to personal development. I really think that it operates effectively as a thesis for problem solving and as a paradigm for self-growth. And I would like to do with that book what Ryan Holiday has done with The Obstacle is the Way. And so, you know, as I said earlier, The Obstacle is a really, really great introduction to Stoicism. Mm-hmm. And I think that I hope that my book will be a really great introduction to Campbell. So I am really about to be head down writing that. But other than that, man, just, you know, doing a little ghostwriting and just, you know, running around coaching and loving life. Really can't complain, man.
Awesome. And I don't know if this is going to be the case when this comes out, but just to reiterate also, the Obstacle is the Way, like that book has meant so much to me this year that I've listened to it twice and I've read it once, like, and it's $4.50 on Audible right now. It's $4.50. It's $10 for a Kindle book. You have to go and read this book. It is really, really outstanding, and it will have a major impact. Like, I will almost like guarantee it will have a major impact. Like, if like me, kind of last year, I was kind of like spinning the tires a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like this organized so much shit in my head for me in terms of like figuring out what's important in life and what do I really want to get out of the time that I have in life. This helped so much. So definitely go give that a look as well.
I agree. Absolutely. For a lot of people, it's a matter of right book, right time.
Yes, totally.
But I find with that book in particular, it always seems to be the right book at the right time for everyone I've recommended it to. So absolutely, guys, check out Ryan Holiday's The Obstacle is the Way.
Well, I mean, there's other things that you can also check out. Don't forget, again, the website's RomanFitnessSystems.com, at John Romanello on Twitter. And, of course, I believe it's the same on Instagram.
And yep.
You're all over the place.
Yeah, Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, Facebook, they're all just John Romanello. I'm very clever. I used my name. One thing I will say is, like, for your listeners, I just want to put out there, if you guys are listening to this and you have any questions for me, do me a favor and you can just post on our Facebook page that you listen to me on the Fitcast and you have an in-depth question about business or anything else, and I will happily answer it there or even turn it into a full article. I know that we sort of like ran out of time. Kevin and I are catching up here and we can sort of like go on all day. But anything you guys need, I am here for you. The Fitcast is probably, you know, it's the single best podcast in all the fitness space, and it's done a lot for me. You know, Kevin has always had us on when we've had new stuff coming out. So I am like tremendously excited to be back and to be back in the rotation of guests. And if there's anything you guys need as listeners, please just reach out to me and I will make sure that you get it, because I very much value what Kevin does, and I know that he values you as listeners, and I want to just help how I can.
God damn, man, that's super, super kind of you to say. And this, the promise that I can make going forward is that it will be a much shorter length of time before the next time that we have you on. And even like if we get a bunch of questions, like we can always just jump on and do another one. That's the great thing about Skype, the internet, and podcasting is like, shit, we don't have to go by the CBS schedule. We can just do this whenever we want. So seriously, thank you so much for coming back on and chatting. And this was a blast. Like, again, I feel like luckily they haven't called me just yet, but I feel like we can talk forever. So thank you so much. And I'll talk to you very, very soon.
Talk soon, buddy.